So, here we go, the actual sermon. The setting for our gospel reading is in John's version of the Last Supper, all the way back to before Easter, right? Where he had just told his disciples that he will be leaving them in order to come back, and that Peter will abandon Jesus. Well, they all will. Which is why Jesus reassures them by saying, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me." Jesus acknowledges their fear without condoning it, and he leads them to faith with his response. There are many things in this short passage that I want to touch on today. We have Jesus saying that in his Father's house are many dwelling places. Jesus tells his disciple that he's the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through him. And he and the Father are one. If you've seen him, you've seen the Father. And also, our image of God is too small. There's a lot here. And if you've heard this passage before, I might be offering you a different perspective to what you have heard in the past. I suggest you get used to that. So let's start with "my Father's house are many dwelling places." This is not a synonym for heaven or for a time after we die. It's now. The location is found in relationship. God's relationship with us, here, now, today. What if this is about Jesus going to prepare a place for us after his resurrection? This is the story before, just to put it in context. In the joyful expectation that we will join him in relationship. It's all about God indwelling in us. And what if the fact that there are many rooms is a sign that there is room for everyone who wants to come? And no one is excluded. No one. We choose. And that we can start living there now, living in that relationship with God as of today, because Jesus has prepared a place for us and is coming back through the Holy Spirit, living in us today and every day. Remember, in the context, he's not gone away yet, and the Spirit hasn't arrived yet. How can Jesus do that? Sugar. Think of it this way. If you have a glass of water and you have a tablet that you dissolve into the water, the tablet disappears, right? Jesus physically disappears, and yet the remains of the tablet is everywhere. Jesus is everywhere by God's grace and thanks to the Spirit who is with us and in us. Jesus disappears and comes back through the Holy Spirit, if we choose. Teachers like Jesus value students who challenge, who ask challenging questions. "Hello, Thomas. Hello, Philip." His answer to their questions is pastoral. It's not about who's going to heaven. His leaving isn't abandonment. It's a promise of greater intimacy with his followers. He answers, "Thomas, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." I have mainly heard this verse interpreted in an exclusionary manner, like "become followers of Jesus or else suffer the consequences." Or, "if you don't have the right theology, come to the right denomination, and you're doomed." I don't think Jesus is saying that at all. Jesus is answering Thomas's question by saying, "He is the way, the truth, and the life." Follow my bouncing ball for a sec. The early followers of Jesus were known as the followers of the way. So what is the way? Jesus isn't giving us directions. So what if, rather than giving us directions, he journeys with us and with them? And what if the pathway that we are to follow is him? His answer to Thomas is basically, sure, you know the way. You've been walking it this whole time. You've been with me. Not just walking it, but living it. We lived it by being inclusive, loving mercy, being compassionate, doing justice, forgiving, walking humbly before God, and engaging in nonviolence. Whew, the way is a tough stuff, isn't it? We follow his lead by listening to the Holy Spirit and by following his teachings and following in his footsteps, which are a daily challenge for me. And if they're not for you, I want to talk with you because I need your help. On to Philip's question. It can be reframed as, what does God look like? Now, Philip, being a good Jew, would know that no one has seen God. So it's a bizarre question. So Jesus' answer is, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. This speaks to the intimacy between the Father and Jesus. They are one. Jesus' works all come from the Father. Jesus' works are actually the Father's works. There was a notion, Jewish notion, that an emissary bears oneness with the sender. The same identity, the same authority. Jesus is saying that the Father and him are one. If you want to know what God looks like, look at the works of Jesus, which are the works of the Father. Look at his life, his deeds, his character, loving, including those who are excluded, forgiving, compassionate. Now, this next bit is a hard nut to crack. Jesus says, I will do whatever you ask in my name, so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If in my name you ask me for anything, I will do it. This next question is a bit funny. I say it in tongue in cheese, but tongue in cheese. Have you ever experienced everyday prayer being answered exactly the way you asked it? Anybody? Please, again, put your hand up. I want to have a good talk with you. I'm not sure we can fully understand this verse, but I'm pretty sure we can gain some understanding. I think I'm on safe ground in saying that none of us has a perfect understanding of God, and that our image of God is partial, at best. And God is calling us into an ever-deepening relationship. In our partial understanding of God, we end up with small g-gods, if you will, or an incomplete version of God as part of our image. God calls us to go deeper. You might have heard some of these little g-gods. There's the bargaining God. The God we bargain with, saying such things like, if you do this for me, then I promise I'll do this for you, God. Or thinking, if I'm only good enough, see perfect, then I'll be loved and forgiven. I'm not sure God works that way. And by the way, please note that you are already beloved. You are already forgiven. Then there's the safety God. This God cures all ills, keeps me safe from harm of any kind. So why have I suffered? Incomplete picture, I think. And finally, what about the perfect will God? With this God, everything that ever happens is God's will. I'm saying God with a little g. So what happens when we sin? Do we say that the perfect will of God is to allow me to sin so I can be forgiven? Am I responsible for my sins? Or God? You see where the problem is? Now, these are partial images to God, and they have some truths in them. But I think God calls us to go deeper. Calls us into an ever-deepening relationship with Him. And in any relationship that goes deeper, we gain a better understanding of the other person, don't we? So this week, oh good, he's on to the end. So this week, I would invite you to one of two things. First, I invite you to think of your image of God. Reflect on your understanding of God and ask God to deepen it. Do this repeatedly. Maybe something will happen. Secondly, God is with us and in us. Today, He lives in us and we in Him. We are invited to walk in God's footsteps and He in ours. He invites us to be His body, His hands, His feet, in a world that needs healing, love, and justice. This week, I invite you, when you walk, to think that God is walking with you. When you do something with your hands, that God is acting through your actions, including your words. May your relationship with God deepen this week.